You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. This is Alan Collier, and this time of the month, on the second Wednesday between 12 and 1, we always have the legal team from Hutchison Legal. I have with me today Con and Armin. Welcome, guys.
Yes, good afternoon.
Great to have you along. Now, when we had the ladies in last time, we asked them to go away, and we did have a question from one of our listeners. It's about an escaping horse. Now, we're not talking about a business where the business is an adjustment business and all that. But very often you'll be driving along and you'll see somebody that owns a few acres puts a sign up, you know, come and adjust your horse here, $5 a week or whatever it might be. Now, the question has been asked about the responsibilities on that. First of all, what responsibility is there on the person that's put that sign up to look after the horse? Now, generally, the person themselves have to go and feed the horse either once or twice a day or whatever they do and rub them down and whatever's got to happen. But first of all, who's responsible for the horse to make sure that that horse is still in that property? B, the horse breaks out, gets out on the road. A car hits it and the horse is killed. So now who holds responsibility? The car driver says, well, I'm not going to claim on my insurance. I just was driving along. It was dark at night and this horse bolted out of nowhere and I hit it. So he says, I'm not going to claim on my insurance. I want my $5,000 worth of damage repaired. The person who says the horse says, well, I got a horse here worth a couple of grand and it's been killed. I want compensation. So what happens then, please, guys? I believe, Armin, you're going to tell us what should happen.
Yes, Alan, thank you so much for that and glad to be here. First and foremost, in such situations, let's start from the beginning in adjustments. If there is a property owner where a horse owner has left their horse, so the property owner has a duty of care to the horse, includes feeding him, providing proper fences that he doesn't break out, taking care of him, all the general necessities. So that should answer your first question, that the property owner should take care of the horse. In the case where a horse actually breaks out and escapes and causes any kind of damage, since the duty of care is with the property owner where the adjustment is, the property owner will be held liable if there's any damage caused by the horse, not the owner of the horse, because he did not have any control over the horse at that particular time. Right. So in that case, the liability lies with the property owner. The property owner, yes.
So if a person owns a few acres, they should be very careful to make sure that the horse can't escape, don't they? Because otherwise the person might only be getting $10 a week for putting the horse there, and they could all of a sudden be hit with a few $1,000 bills, couldn't they?
Yes, they could be. So it's always they have to have proper fencing. The law says what a reasonable man, in the eyes of a reasonable man, is considered proper fencing. So as long as there's proper fencing there, but then the horse still escapes if there's no so he's not liable. But if he has not done any proper fencing, and he's definitely liable to property owner, yes.
Well, there'd have to be something wrong with the fencing for the horse to get out, wouldn't there?
Definitely, yes.
Yeah, all right. Oh, that's terrific for answering that. Now, of course, we're in some fairly uncertain times, and there are some new proposals for both residential and commercial tenants and landlords. Do you want to just run those past us, please?
Yes, Alan, thanks for that. I think it was just yesterday the Prime Minister made announcements about the situation between commercial landlords and tenants. So I'll try and address a little bit around that first. The National Cabinet, which involves all the state leaders as well as the federal leaders, decided to that the states will implement a code, a national code to ensure that there are some negotiations between landlord and tenants for commercial tenancies. However, it will only apply where the tenant has a turnover of less than $50 million, which covers a lot of tenancies, but also that tenant must have applied for the JobKeeper payment. So the government has quite cleverly tried to link one form of assistance with another by saying that if a business has had to put off workers, has had a reduction in its turnover, and I think for JobKeeper it's at least 30%, if that has occurred for the business, then only then can that tenant apply for this rent relief or rent reduction with the landlord. And the landlord has to negotiate with the tenant around either deferring rent or reducing rent. It needs to be, the Prime Minister used the word proportionate, it needs to be a proportionate response. And if a tenant can demonstrate that its turnover has gone down by, let's say, 50%, and therefore applies for JobKeeper payments so that the tenant doesn't have to make staff redundant or stand them down. If that tenant's eligible for the JobKeeper, then the tenant can approach the landlord and say, look, I need at least a 50% of the turnover reduction. So in the example, it would be a 25% reduction of rent. It's not
50%. Can I just ask, is that deferred rent? So, like, is the expectation that the tenant would make that up at a later stage, or once it's gone, it's gone?
I think they've commercial tenancies. They've tried to make it that you have to honour the lease as best you can. However, you can apply for this reduction, and you can defer rental payments, and it's got to be spread over. What they're saying is try and spread that deferral. So let's say you don't pay rent for 3 months or you get a reduction for 3 months. Yep. Whatever that value is needs to be added back to the rest of the lease term. So it's sort of like saying, or you could say for the next 6 months I will pay you the equivalent of $30,000 less rent over the next 6 months, but then that $30,000 is added on to the rest of the term. However, the $30,000 should be reduced to $15,000 only, and then that's payable over the rest of the term. So there is a reduction in rent as well as spreading it over a longer period of time. So it's aimed at.
Is that the same?
Sorry. It's aimed at assisting the cash flow, and it's also aimed at making sure that we don't have this large abandonment of premises. But as I say, it only applies in those situations where the turnover's gone down and you can get JobKeeper payments. So
what about residential?
Now, in the residential space, as I understand it, there's not a agreed code yet. There has been a ban on evictions, but there's no similar sort of scheme forcing landlord and tenants to negotiate. There's nothing sort of binding on the landlords in that sense. So in terms of the rental amounts, so it's not clear yet. The states all have to pass laws in regards to residential tenancies because the Commonwealth doesn't really have jurisdiction in that space. It can control companies, can't control the state laws around residential tenancies. So, yeah, there's a lot of concern. People are saying that evictions are happening anyway. You know, not everyone's informed, and there's no sort of clear place to point about you can't evict me because the Prime Minister said so. It's a bit like that.
And the other issue is, though, too, you don't know if a landlord does say, well, I'll reduce the rent by 30% or 50% for the next 3 months, but there's nothing legislated that then says that the residential tenant has to make that up, is there?
Yeah, I don't think anything is legislated yet by the states or by Victoria. I'm not aware of Victoria legislating yet. I think they intend to, but yeah, at right this moment, I don't know that that's actually happened. They just keep trying to send the message through the media, you know, be sensible, be reasonable. But yeah, everyone's got different circumstances, unfortunately, and there's a lot of financial pressure on both sides of that discussion.
Well, I mean, you and I just mentioned off air too that some of these are only small mums and dads investors that might be owned one or two properties, and that's their only income.
Yes, there's no relief. Landlords, if that's their only income, is their rental income on investment properties that they own. Yes, if the tenants, they'll have tenants that they can't evict and not paying rent. So they'll have no income, a very difficult situation. And owning, I don't know all the Centrelink eligibility. I think they were saying they would relax the asset rules around any Centrelink payments, but if you're in your retirement and you own investment properties, and I don't know how that works through, and you could be left with no income at all if the tenants aren't paying and you can't evict them.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, guys, so we've got to take a quick break.
It's an arrow road.
listening to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 28 minutes past 12, and we have us, with us the legal team from Hutchison Legal, both Con and Armin. Now, there's a bit of debate going on as to how we can monitor people over this, and there's a little bit of a debate about whether drones should be used. Is there a law against that, or I mean, it's probably not a good idea, but what does the law actually say about it? Please, Con.
Okay. So, I've been made aware that the Perth police force have said that they will be using drones to monitor compliance with social distancing. So that the police officers don't have to physically go everywhere, but then they'll be able to see what's going on the streets. It does raise interesting issues. A police force doing it might be acceptable, and especially given we have a state of emergency declaration in Victoria, that may then justify the police doing it. Now, Victoria Police, I don't think, are doing it yet. Whether they will or not, we'll wait and see. But it does raise issues of privacy. Are the drones allowed to cross your property boundary? How do you ask the drone to leave if you don't give it permission to be on your property or above your property? Can you shoot it? I wouldn't recommend it.
That's a good idea.
Some people might be tempted if you wave it. It's, a lot of them have cameras, of course, and you're telling it to go away. And if it doesn't go away, well, what are your rights there? It's. I wouldn't be shooting it, but you might want to report it to the police. They might send their own drone to shoot it down. It's really a brave new world. The question is about as privacy as well. You know, generally you're meant to give your consent to your photo being taken, being recorded on the new. You know, sometimes you'll see. On the news, you'll see general shots of crowds. Well, we used to see them. Of course, we don't see them now. But is your consent given to be, you know, broadcast or telecast or recorded? There's laws around surveillance as well. You're not meant to intercept other people's communications. So if a drone is trying to view what's going on, it could be a breach of privacy.
Could I just ask one question? You're saying that they're in Western Australia, they're being used to monitor people. Could they get a conviction from the drone, or would the drone be used and then a police car go around and book them? Well, if the drone could pick out, say it was you or me and we had 10 people in the backyard, could they get a conviction on that? Would that be legal?
I think that they would use it as part of the evidence to say that the police prosecutors have to prove that the crime happened beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, if it's a police drone videoing the backyard of a group of 10 people having a barbecue in breach of our current isolation laws, or social distancing law, then yes, I think it would be added to the evidence. If it was the neighbour taking the video and not able to prove the date and time and then handing that into the police, it would be a police discretion to decide whether they would use that evidence or not, or if they would say, look, ring us next time and we'll go around and catch them out so that the police officers can catch them in the act, if I can put it that way. So it's going to, yeah, again, I think it would depend.
Fair enough. Now, let's just go on a bit. We were talking a lot about the virus. There are various legal consequences. You were talking about contracts. Can you void a contract because of something to do with the virus? Armin, are you going to answer that?
Yes. So what we do in contracts, there's always a clause, which is, and you can either say call it an act of God clause or a force majeure clause, that refers to where situations are beyond the party's control. In such situations, like the COVID now we speak, so people cannot meet deadlines in a contract or certain terms cannot be met. If there's such clause in the contract, then they can seek relief and the contract can be void. If there's no such clause in a contract, the common law principles of contract law, there's the contract can be again void of frustration. So there is an option for the parties, as long as they can discuss it and fit through it.
All right. So also there are other legal consequences because of the virus, isn't there?
Yes. Well, very common, as you can see in social media as well, people are fighting over basic necessities like toilet paper, hand sanitizers in the supermarket. They're having brawls over all these things. This can lead to serious injuries, and obviously those who are injured can have a claim against them. This will all be dealt under the Crimes Act. So these can have serious criminal implications.
Fair enough. And that's just out of something that people can do. And I see here something about the Victorian State of Emergency Declaration as legal consequences. What sort of are we talking about other legal consequences? I got you on the hop, did I?
That's okay. this is relating to insurance claims, what kind of impact they could have. There is, as we can see, there's so much, all these can, I've read news that people are being, there's racist remarks against Asian communities and, just in general hate, there's just hate crimes going around, so to speak. So these also fall under criminal acts, if you could say.
Yeah, look, there are laws around racial and religious tolerance in Victoria. You can't incite hatred, incite violence towards people. Unfortunately, there's been incidents of people suffering. People who are born and bred 100% Australian, but just because of their appearance being racially vilified, as if they were responsible somehow for this virus affecting our lives. With the state of emergency declaration, that gives the state government a whole range of extra powers. So that's why they can enforce these laws around social distancing. Normally, it would be impinging our freedoms of communication, our freedoms of association. Our fundamental rights and civil liberties are being drastically hampered now. In this kind of situation, where it's because of a virus that we don't want to spread or catch, we seem to be quite willingly complying and following it. But of course, it's not that long ago in history where governments tried to impose this kind of restrictions on people for other means, for other ends in mind, and people would rebel against it. And say, I don't have to have my freedoms curtailed like that. So it's an interesting situation. And because of these responses by governments, state and federal, it's impacting, I think Aman briefly mentioned insurances. Everybody who bought a travel insurance policy has been impacted greatly by being stuck in some other country. With no way of getting out, no money to, and not even being able to make a claim on their travel insurance that they thought would cover them. So, there's a lot of different consequences from that, and the shutting of borders too. The various states have got various restrictions now on interstate movement, which is against our fundamental document, the Constitution, our Federation. We are not meant to have closed borders, but under the current regime, we are putting up with it.
Con, is there it? I know people keep talking, oh, this could go on 3 months, 6 months, and all that. when they declare a state emergency, this might be a bit of an unfair question to ask you off just off the top of the head. Is it ongoing, or when they declare that state of emergency, do they have to say, well, it's for the next 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, or anything? Do you know?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Alan. I don't know off the top of my head. Try and look it up for you soon. I would have thought that they would announce an initial date with an initial sort of sunset date, and then they'll just keep extending it if necessary. So,
but I don't think they have. I think that's what I know. Some people are a bit sort of skeptical, or not skeptical, a bit of a frightened that so far we haven't heard a date that this may be lifted. I mean, they talk 3 months, 6 months and all that. I thought there might have been, when you did a state of emergency declaration, that you had to have an end date, even if you extended it. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Well, I think we should just listen to the Prime Minister. He said this is going to have to go for 6 months. I think you should agree. You should understand that's the situation. We should prepare ourselves mentally for 6 months of these kind of movement restrictions, working from home, these kind of things. So, and we should try and look for the positives and benefits out of all this. It's not all bad news. It's not all negative. There's a lot of upside on the changes.
And I think some people have said, and I think even the Prime Minister said, in a lot of ways, as far as freedom, that you've almost got to wipe 2020 out, don't you? And by 2021, hopefully, we'll have a lot of our things back that we can do. It just seems to be that 2020 is going to be, well, that's the sort of thing it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, but we're all learning new ways of communicating and new ways of doing business, new ways of working. And as I say, I think some people are enjoying being able to pat their dog or their cat while they're at home. Others are going stir crazy with cabin fever, and there'll be, unfortunately, from that, there'll be things that go wrong in the house amongst people fighting within the house. So, yeah, it can be good and can be bad.
All right, look, guys, we've just got to take a quick break.
Across the shifting sands, long ago the seeds were sown, for the harvest now at hand. That high tide keeps on rising, and the black skies are moving in. The bitter rain is falling, and it don't look like it's gonna end. We still got each other, and it still feels right. We don't hear the thunder, and we don't feel no rain, 'cause we're making love. Refugees beware, the city is filled with shadows, all dealing in despair. Politics and promises, scandalous and schemes. These days it's getting harder just to hold on to our dreams. For tonight.
Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 14 minutes to one, and we've got the legal hour with us. We've got the boys from Hutchinson Legal, both Con and Armin, and we're talking various legal matters. And I should mention before we go on that if you've got any questions, we can't talk about a particular case, but we're happy to talk about particular parts of the law. We're running out of time today, but if you'd like to send us in somebody from Hutchinson Legal will be with us on the second Wednesday of the month in May. So if you either send it to info@yarravalleyfm.org.au, that's info@yarravalleyfm.org.au, and we'll certainly get some answers for you. Or we've got a Facebook page. Go on to the Yarra Valley FM Facebook page, put the question there, and we'll get it, and we'll get it answered for you next month. But, Con, just before the break, we were talking about the state of emergency declaration. You know a bit more about it now.
Thanks, Alan. In the break, I checked that the Victorian state of emergency was issued on the 16th of March. For a four-week period ending on midnight, April the 13th, which I believe is Easter Monday. But we would expect, given what's going on, that with the success of the social distancing and as they say, flattening the curve, we'd expect that the state of emergency will be extended. Now, the purpose of the state of emergency is to allow these rules around staying at home unless there are essential reasons to leave. And there are some quite substantial fines if you breach.
What a double trespass.
So, yes, we have now the two-person gathering rule, which applies inside and outside your house. But obviously that exempts your immediate family members. You are not supposed to be having the relatives around, the extended family, they're not supposed to come, and you're not supposed to have dinner together and things like that. You're meant to stay with your immediate household family. If you breach these rules under the state of emergency, you could be fined up to $1,652 as an individual. And if you're a business that is not following the rules, you can be fined up to $9,913. And the police can enforce these rules.
They are.
Yeah. Well, I think people might have read that interesting case where a mum and her daughter went out as a learner driver. They went out for a drive so that the daughter could get up her hours, which is, as a learner, you're required to have 120 driving hours. A police officer decided to pull them over and fine them for not staying home. Now, that's been withdrawn now, as I understand it, but technically it might have been correct that you're meant to stay home unless you're going shopping for food, unless you're going for healthcare, for essential goods and services, unless you're going for work or education or for compassionate reasons, you should stay home. That's the message. And there are fines if you breach it. There's also, under the state of emergency, even under the what's called the Public Health and Wellbeing Act in Victoria, there are large fines there, which could be $20,000 or more under the act as well. So it's quite serious. It's not a joke. This won't matter, that won't matter. It's quite serious. It's all aimed at stopping interactions between people in physical interactions so that the spread of the virus is reduced as far as possible.
And it's the only way we're going to get on top of it too is social isolation too, isn't it?
Well, I think the statistics are proving that at the moment. The number of new cases being reported is stabilised or going down every day. And I think that's really important, as they say, for the health system, being able to cope with the number of people that do, unfortunately, become infected and require hospitalisation.
And I guess one thing that we need to stress, and I know the Premier was this morning, that Easter is just going to be a stay at home. I mean, this idea of people thinking they can go away for Easter and do all sorts of things, they just can't. And I mean, we've got the numbers down, as you said, and if we start messing around, well, they're going to go up and we're going to be, we've wasted all that we've done, haven't we?
Oh, yeah, look, I think people would like nothing better than to go to, you know, some relative has a holiday house in the country. But I can tell you what, the locals will be out like a lynch mob. social distancing aside, you know, they'll be about 2 metres apart with pitchforks. If you're a city slicker and you dare bring the virus to their blissful, peaceful town. So stay away, stay home. At least I think, I'm pretty sure that's the message, and the country folk will let you know about it.
I'm pretty certain too. All right, guys, look, we always, I'll just get onto this first of all. We always like to send you away with a question for somebody to come back and answer it next month. Now, I've had a phone call from somebody who very early in the year, I think probably sort of January, when none of this virus was really on the scene, and they actually paid, their wife is having a substantial birthday this year, probably around May, June, I think they said. And they paid, they looked up and they decided they want to have this nice, cosy weekend away. And the guy decided he'd take the Friday off and the Monday off, so he'd have a long weekend, an extra long weekend. So he looked up and he found this really nice place. I don't know whether it's a motel or a cabins or something like that, but it's quite a long way from Melbourne. So we're talking a couple hundred k's from Melbourne. He paid a deposit, right? So he then says, with this virus, he contacted them and said, well, you know, obviously we're not coming. We're not allowed to drive that far. And he was told, well, that's not my problem. The room is still here. I'll have the room all ready for you. I'm not giving you deposit back. Bad luck. Now, I think that's a very stupid decision to make. But anyway, this guy's asking not the moral question here. He's asking the legal situation. First of all, he's paid a deposit, and now the law basically says he can't go there. So where does that stand? Secondly, when he paid on a credit card, so you give all, but he paid it over the phone, so they've got all his details for his phone for his credit card. So what would happen if this person turned a bit nasty and then said, "Oh well, I'm going to take the rooms here. You didn't use it. I'm going to take the whole lot on your credit card." Now, my understanding would be, if this guy knew about it quickly, he could get the bank to reverse it. But what's the legal situation in a case like that where he can't fulfil what I would say to you as a contract because the law won't let him do it? The third thing is, what right has he got to demand either a credit note so that he could go, he and his wife could go at a later date? And fourth, what legal right has he got to get a refund? If he just said, look, I don't want to do it anymore, the whole thing's turned bad, her birthday will be 6 months past by the time it does, what's the legal situation about me getting a refund? So there's really four questions there. So I would like if you guys could take that on and come back next month with us, because I think there's three or four, and I think he's probably not going to be the only person in this situation.
Do you have a copy of the terms and conditions which he agreed to when he made the booking? Is that
what? No, he made it over the phone. He made the booking.
Okay.
Over the phone. So everything was done by the phone. And that's why the other person. And really, look, we don't want to talk about this one person's case. It's brought up these four legal options. You know, what happens about his deposit? What happens about the balance? What legal right has he got to get a credit note? But if he decides the whole birthday will be 6 months gone and he doesn't really want to do it, what legal right has he got to a refund? So we don't want to talk about the one case. We want to talk about the legalities of that whole situation. So if you could come back to us next month on that, we would be really wrapped on that. The other thing, we've still got a few minutes to go. Before we go, with these insurance claims, how can they be affected by the COVID-19? what can you, you know, is there any legal restrictions on insurance claims? And I guess the other one is on travel insurance. Is travel insurance, if you're overseas and the government says you've got to come home, can you, like, I know one guy, and we'll all know this boat, it got nearly to New Zealand and it got turned around and came back. Now, they never got a holiday. They got to within, you know, half a day of New Zealand and got sent back. Can they claim on their travel insurance, do you know, legally?
Yes. the understanding is that the travel insurance companies specifically do include pandemics. Obviously, it is a case-by-case basis on exactly what policy was filled in and agreed to, and whether some of them will have options for extra cover for that kind of situation. It was the key date was the 23rd of January when the World Health Organization issued a travel warning for China. So it's going to... The dates will depend on when various official travel warnings are issued as to when the policy stops covering you. If you've commenced travel after that time, or you haven't bought your policy until after that time, you'll unlikely be covered.
Don't you?
No.
Dude, that could be a costly exercise for some people, couldn't it?
Yeah, very, very costly. I've read a number of stories of people being stuck in another country with no income and no insurance to get them home.
Gee, so I mean, it's I guess out of all this, and I guess we don't know the answers yet, but there's going to be some wash-ups, aren't they? People are probably not going to just be the way they were before. I mean, people are going to be a lot more checking of some of these things, aren't they, to make sure hopefully it'll never happen again, but people are going to be wary, you would think, for some time.
Yes, that's the case. Unfortunately, we learn from our bitter experiences. Hopefully, we learn from that.
Guys, look, it's been terrific to have you with us today. We always enjoy our time with the legal team from Hutchinson Legal, Con and Armin. Thank you very much for your time. Community Connections will be back next Wednesday, and we've got to say thank you to Greg Carrick for all the work he's put into it. We'll have a couple of interviews. I've just got to tie them up. We didn't take any until we saw how the day went, but everything's going all right. So, guys, thank you for coming along. Is there anything that either of you want to just say in as we're winding up?
Yeah, I just want to thank you for keeping going on air and getting the message out there. And we're Hutchinson Legal is open for business. We're finding every other way we can to service the community. So, we look forward to interacting with people online.
And we'll hear from someone from Hutchinson Legal same time, the second Wednesday of the month, and straight after midday news. And I think we're about ready to go to the news now.